Isaiah chapter 58, verse 6. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen, to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rearguard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk.
Romans chapter 8, verse 14. For those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you receive does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you receive brought about your adoption to sonship, and by him we cry, "Abba, Father." The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning, as in the pains of childbirth, right up to the present time. And not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently.
Thank you so much for having me this morning. So I want to talk to you a little bit this morning about the power of hospitality, because I think that is something that is core to the gospel, core to the readings that we've just had as well this morning. So I want to talk a bit about that. I want to talk a bit about family. I want to talk about how family and hospitality playing out well can change the world, and try and do that in about 25 minutes or so. I said I grew up in Worcestershire. When I grew up in Worcestershire, when I was about 8 years old, my parents separated. And my dad moved down to London. So to some degree, actually, London was like an evil place in my head. It's like where bad things happen and we're connected. So it's surprising maybe I wanted to move down here. I tried putting it off. But when my dad left, my mum and I were left sort of on our own in Worcestershire. And I didn't appreciate this at the time, but how difficult that was for a single mother in a church, probably in some ways quite like St. Patrick's, but she felt really isolated and she felt lonely and she felt that all the parties she used to get invited to was now as a single woman with a beautiful 8-year-old ginger kid. Suddenly it was actually quite difficult. She felt lonely. And there was this family, a Roman Catholic family that I went to school with, who took real care of us. And so for every Christmas and every Easter, they would make sure that we were invited to be part of their family. So we got to go and spend those precious times with their family and kind of got to know their grandparents and their uncles and aunts, who always would come those times during the year. And I never would see them any other time in the year, but you kind of knew you were going to see them. And it felt a bit like they became some degree of our family too. And I thought, this is lovely, I look forward to it. But one thing I remember about this family is that at one point they fostered somebody. There was somebody else living in the house. I went to school with their kids, so I saw them regularly. But there was somebody there. And as an eight-year-old boy, I stood in their garden looking over this glorious countryside, thinking, this is what Jesus would want me to do. This, caring for somebody, this is what he wants to do. So as little eight-year-old precocious me in a car driving back home with my mum, was like, Mum, I think we should foster. Can we foster? Which is probably more about me wanting to have a brother or sister, being an only child and lonely, than anything else at the time. But it was interesting, I think, that God planted a seed in that little heart of mine that probably took 20-odd years to come into fruition, but it did. And I think it was there I started to learn the power that hospitality can have to transform the world, even if that is just for one or two people. So I wanted to root this morning, I guess, in a little bit of reality. Over the course of this service, six children will come into care in the UK. There are 109 children will come into care in the UK at some point today. Let's make that a little bit more relevant about Sutton. So in Sutton, at the last recorded figures, 237 children were in care. That was a 10% increase on the year before. That's quite a lot for any system to deal with, of trying to find homes for that 10% growth. Also, at the end of last financial year, there were 40 children across sort of the boroughs that London, like the outer London boroughs, who were in need of adoption. And often these children come from families where they've experienced neglect, where they've maybe experienced abuse or dysfunction. They can't remain living with their parents. Maybe they've also suffered things like bereavement in a small number. And the really sad reality, and why I want to be here with you this morning, is there aren't enough homes for all these children to find the right place for them to be. There aren't enough homes. We had a child who lived with us, who sadly had to move on. Sometimes that happens in fostering. But he didn't move on down the road to another foster carer who had a space, I don't know, in Purley or in Cheam or something like that. He had to move to Norfolk because there was nobody who was able to care for him, a young man on his own, a young boy on his own, close to London, close to Sutton. And part of me burned inside, angry at that. I was sad he was leaving, but I knew it was the right thing. But I was so angry that he had to go 6 hours away. That's the reality that's happening around us this morning. A few years ago, the organisation I work for, Home for Good, we're a national fostering and adoption movement of wanting to see the church in the UK, church of all creeds and all denominations and all networks, come together to say, actually, that fostering and adoption, of caring for vulnerable children, is something that is in our DNA as Christians. It is kind of what we're built to do, and you can see that from the readings coming out today. But we ran a campaign around, at the time, unaccompanied minors coming in from Europe or coming in from further from the world, saying, who will care for these young people as they arrive in the UK? And we were inundated with responses. And I think the reason we were inundated with responses, 15,000 across the whole of the UK saying, yeah, we want to foster a refugee child, is because we could kind of get it. We get what a refugee looks like. They're in the newspapers. We see them. We can kind of tell exactly what that looks like. It's so obvious. And sometimes what isn't obvious around children who need to be looked after within our communities is we don't know who they are. We don't know what they look like. We can't envisage them. There could be children going into the school gates next to your birth children or your grandchildren, and you wouldn't know. So there's a little video here I want to show of a little sibling group, two brothers, who we're trying to help find a home for at the moment, just to try and couch what we're talking about today in a little bit of reality. When I start talking about some children, these are some of the guys who are waiting for it. So should we play this quick video? A little glimpse into two little boys' lives. You know what they're defined as? By the Department of Education. They're defined as children who are hard to place. Those little boys, and the reason they're hard to place is because they're mixed race, the reason, because they're twins. Trying to find somebody who's going to want to open their home to that and go through this this process to become an adopter for them is tricky, because generally we think about having children one at a time. That's how I did it. Well, I didn't do it. My wife did it. We don't think about doing things often at the same time, do we? We've got all these paradigms for how families grow. And these little boys here think, like, how are they going to fit in that? They've obviously got some additional needs too. Some children have additional needs. When you've experienced neglect and trauma, we're going to come on to a little bit later, that creates a sense of additional need in anybody. Do you think these young boys we just saw there are any less deserving of a family than anyone else? No, I don't think so. When we talk about fostering adoption, are they kind of what you think of? I don't know. But you see, finding homes for children really, really matters. And I want to tell you a little bit more now about it, because actually it's stuff that we are already trying to do stuff as churches to care for the world, and we're maybe missing the point sometimes. So statistically speaking, children in care are the most likely to end up on the streets, in prison or in refuges. The Sutton Cold Weather Night Shelter has just successfully concluded its second year. I wonder how many of the people, homeless people, who then got to stay in churches across Sutton over the past few months had an experience of being in care as a young person. You know, a quarter of the adult population are care leavers. Adult prison population are care leavers. Children who've lived in care make up about 0.07% of all children, but yet half of the prison population have had experience of being in care. 50% of children in the youth justice system are care experienced too. A third of people who are homeless will have some element of having been in care in their life. A third of sex workers have experienced being in care at some point, this rupturing of family life, as I hoped. You know, young people who've experienced care, they're five times more likely to have mental health problems than the rest of the population. They're nine times more likely to die before the age of 21 than the rest of the population. And why is that? It's this rupturing of the predictable family life that they hoped they were going to have, that for whatever reason hasn't played out that way. And this is the consequence. You know, the church is at the front of so many wonderful initiatives around the world. CAP, think about it, Christians Against Poverty, food banks. We often do homeless work. We might do work on the streets. We get involved with lots and lots of different things as a church globally. But often we wait until those young people who've had very difficult early lives, not having secure families, and we wait until they're adults before we want to work with them. When, if we could have worked with them when they were younger and provided them the sense of permanence and security that needed, that sense of love and care and patience that they're going to need to understand what's going on in their life, we might not then be working with them when they're living on the street in the future. Does that make sense? I'm often reminded when I speak to foster carers, or whether I speak to local authorities, or wherever I go, actually, I speak about this. But in Jeremiah 29, verse 7, it says this, "Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I've carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you will prosper too." And there's this thing about seeking the peace and prosperity. It's really active. It requires us to do something. It's a bit like Isaiah 58 that we read just now, fasting, that fasting is not passive, just holding off, not eating food. The fasting that God desires is active, doing something with what we have. And the reason that Home for Good exists, this fostering and adoption movement across the UK, is because we believe the church can be good news to children in need of homes. And this is why. We've got this coming from the readings too. We have received extraordinary hospitality ourselves. In Romans 8, we've just been looking at it. We've been hearing about our adoption. That's something for all of you, for all of us, no matter what our backgrounds, no matter who we are, no matter where we're going, we are adopted into God's family. We are one family, whether we're from the same church or not, because Jesus has paid it all so that we would be adopted. I used to sometimes think, well, what happens when you're saved? What are you saved for? We're saved to be brought into God's family, to be adopted and have that sense of security. This is a spiritual truth that we all can claim. It's why we get to call ourselves brothers and sisters, isn't it? And it says, we know the whole of creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. This is the best news in the world. The best news in the world is not that Jesus died for your sins. The best news is what happens after that. Right? You with me? The best news is that we get a family, we get a hope, we get a future, we become co-heirs in Christ. That is all about our adoption. That is the consequence of Jesus dying on the cross for us. But you see, also, the Bible speaks powerfully of why we're adopted. We are people who are chosen by God, and we're chosen for a purpose. So the first half of this equation is, we're loved. No matter who you are loved. You can have secure confidence that you have a hope and a future. Recently, or a couple of years ago, met the Bishop of Worcester, who he adopted three children with his wife. And he told me the story when they went to the hearing with the judge conferring the adoption. The judge said this. He said, biological conception can sometimes be an accident. Adoption, though, is always an act of love. Isn't that powerful? Adoption is always an act of love, and that's what God's done for us. That's the first part of the equation. The second half of the equation of the gospel really is this, is that we reflect that love. Isn't it that? We are chosen to reflect the hospitality, the welcome, that spiritual security that God has given us to the world. I guess we're talking about that a little bit, like in naming him. Who are we naming? We're naming a king who has given everything of himself so that we would have a security in a place. And the picture that why Paul speaks about adoption is because actually in the first century sort of Roman world, adoption was a really powerful thing. Emperors would adopt a young person who they wanted to ultimately take over ruling from them because they didn't trust their own children necessarily. They would adopt because they wanted to make sure that their lineage was something they could be proud of. Somebody who would carry on the good work that they had been doing. They adopted people who would reflect their character. So when Paul is telling us in Romans that we've been waiting for our adoption, he's also telling us that we get to take on God's character, which makes us wonder, well, what is God's character? What are some of the things that matter to him? In Psalm 68 it says this, a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows is God in his holy dwelling. He sets the lonely in families. He leads out the prisoners with singing. Or in James 1:23 it says this, religion that our Father in heaven finds pure and acceptable is this, to care for widows and orphans in their distress. We're called to imitate God's character. I think we're called as Christians to demonstrate countercultural hospitality to the world around us. Because in that we are demonstrating God's love. And that way, hospitality, I'm thinking of what Dave and Katie are stepping forward to do, and I hope others in this church too will do that too. This is part of our worship. So if we care about worshipping God, we need to worship also by caring. Because it's what God's telling us to do in his word. So a little bit about my wife's and my story. When we first got married, my wife was working in a secure training centre over in Medway. She was a teacher, a history teacher. And so whenever a child maybe committed a crime, or generally a category A crime, that's a pretty serious one, that we're thinking arson, rape, murder, that kind of crime, that would maybe in the news, she'd be thinking, I'll be teaching them tomorrow. Because that's where they went. And within this secure training centre, which essentially is a child prison with a school embedded in it, if you need to think of what it looks like, there was a 15-year-old girl who had finished the end of her custodial sentence and couldn't leave. And the reason she couldn't leave is because nobody wanted to have her. We read a little second ago, didn't we, about he leads the prisoners out with singing. There's some element of thinking, this is so wrong, isn't it? So wrong. There is a young girl who has finished being a prisoner, but she can't be led out with singing because nobody will give her a home. And my wife came back and said, this is silly. Why on earth am I teaching her when the real need is something that we could provide with our own home? And so we, 6 months into marriage, started the process to become foster carers. Don't do that if you're 6 months into marriage. This is a really silly idea. It will stress you out massively and be very, very challenging and difficult. Give it at least about 2 years, I would say. That would be my professional opinion. But anyway, we were nuts and decided 6 months in. You've been married for longer than 6 months, haven't you? Yeah, that's good. Yeah, excellent. So we became foster carers. Because we've got a lot of experience actually working with some of these young people. So they were willing to go, well, you're crazy and young, we'll get you in. And we started caring for an 11-year-old boy for about 3 months before he moved on to something else. And then we found out we were waiting, having Heidi, which we weren't expecting, and we moved down to Sutton. And then one day we got a phone call, or I got a phone call from my wife at 5 to 5 in the evening, and she said, I've just said yes to 4 foster children. I was like, you've done what? Said yes to 4 foster children. I was like, we can't do that. Why did you say yes? We can't look after them. You've got to call up and say no. She said, I'm sorry, I've said yes. Some of our friends are being around a mattress and a cot. And I was like, we really can't do this. She said, well, I can give you the social worker's number then if you want to call her up and say, no, we can't do this. So I sort of ring up the social worker. I'm really sorry, I think my wife's made a mistake. She said yes to 4 children. I don't think we can do that. We don't have enough space. And the social worker said, I'm really... Oh, that's a shame, because they're in the taxi on the way to your house. I was prepared for this. This is not a shock for me in terms of what's actually happening. It's just an emotional shock, right? So I was like, well, we can do tonight. I said, well, I think we need a week. Okay, well, we'll give you a week. We can do this for a week. And after that first week, 2 of the children remained with us and 2 moved somewhere else around the corner. Subsequently went on to be adopted. And those other 2 remained for 3.5 years and 4 years or so with us. Because actually for them, in that time of turmoil for them, for that first week, they got to all be together because we happened to have a house with enough rooms. Felt a little bit like we did fast during that week. We fasted sleep. We fasted lots of things. But like, there's an element of we had something that we weren't using and then were able to share that with somebody who was. See, if we're going to practice hospitality and live this out, it's going to get messy. Pete Gregg, who leads the 24/7 movement, says this. He says, people tell me that they have the gift of hospitality, by which I think they mean they like dinner parties. They mean they have, or at least aspire to have, a beautiful home with underutilized spare room in which they can attain exotic, interesting, appreciative guests who confirm just how lovely their home is. This is not the gift of hospitality. This is the gift of a box of chocolates. Biblical hospitality starts in the heart and not in an IKEA catalogue. It's a really bad lifestyle choice. True hospitality allows for interruption, goes the second mile, and above all is present to people. And he says, this is where I fell most. He says, listening is the highest form of hospitality, says Henry Nouwen. Not to change people, but offering them space where change can take place. Hospitality like this rarely comes with a box of chocolate. It can often hurt our schedules, our emotions, our bank accounts, and yes, it can even mess up our homes. Psalm 68 said, God places the lonely in families. Whether those are individual families or within the church, we're supposed to be places of hope, places of healing, places of patience, places of forgiveness. The things that we have received from God, our Heavenly Father, that is what our job is as reflectors of his character. Families are a place where we're supposed to be devoted to one another. Families are a place where we're supposed to be devoted to one another. But let's quickly think of a child who's coming into care. They've experienced significant trauma. Whether that's neglect, whether that's abuse, family dysfunction, absent parenting, bereavement, each will have had, received, not because they asked for it, a set of foundations in their life that make loving, make trusting, making believing adults really difficult. We've got a slide that I want to come up here. A child's brain develops differently if they don't get care and attention that they need growing up. You can see here the difference between a child that's probably had good, you know, or good enough parenting on one side and one who has been neglected. What do you see? Stuff is missing. Stuff is absent. Things are underdeveloped. So when this is of a 3-year-old, when a child maybe reaches 6, they're already dealing with a backlog of what's going to happen. Are they going to behave like a 6-year-old you expect? No. But yeah, they're in a 6-year-old body. What happens when you get to 11? You're an 11-year-old's body, but what's going on inside? When Pete Gregg says, sometimes this can mess up our homes, It can. But part of what that is all about is being able to sit with somebody day by day through the challenges of them trying to understand who they are, the things that have gone wrong, make sense of their lives, work out what happens next in the future, and sit with them so that healing can slowly take place. It will come as no shock and surprise to you that the way in which healing like this happens is love. And that is something that actually, from a neurological perspective, is only really being discovered now. Research that is being undertaken sort of very currently is showing the impact that unconditional, patient, enduring love can have on being able to heal some of the things that have gone wrong. There is great hope in this calling of healing, of bringing newness. And it's in family where this is possible, where being part of a family isn't based on performance, it's not based on achievement, it's not based on being popular or whatever. It's based on that you are welcomed in and you are part of this. That's what we get spiritually, isn't it, from God our Father. We are part of this family because he loves us, right? We've got space for our healing, of the things that we need healing to take place. But it's not just about individual families, it's about a whole church. And so I kind of want to just labour this point a little bit before we come to a close. David and Katie going through the process, I hope they are not the first in this church. Recently I met a dad at school, and our sons are both in nursery together, and he said, oh, you should go to the fostering church in Sutton. I was like, what do you mean the fostering church? Sutton Vineyard Church, there are loads of foster carers. I thought, like, yeah, there are some foster carers, there aren't enough. I wouldn't define it as the fostering church, but wouldn't it be amazing if there were churches that were fostering churches, that they were so known because all the children who needed to be looked after in Sutton had places because those churches had said, you know what, I will go through the arduous process of having all these difficult questions asked of me so I can use the spare rooms and stuff that I have, and I'll look after that. What if all the other people in churches who didn't have the spare room said, I will support you and look after you so that you can care for somebody else? That I would call a fostering church. Great. Sutton Vineyard are doing well. I think you're in the first steps. I hope my church is also in the first steps doing that. That we're becoming fostering churches that say, we are going to be places of welcome for you for as long as you need. However that looks. But if we are going to be prepared to meet some of these needs, see healing happen, we need to be prepared too for the kind of fasting that we read about in Isaiah 58. It is going to cost us as a church for us to live out that calling. It will mean that we will have less than maybe we had before. It will mean that maybe within your kids' work, sometimes your children, if you've got children out there at the moment, might come back and say, there was a child and they said something difficult. They said something that upset me. They said something that scared me. It might mean that we, God's children already here, will feel more uncomfortable because we have opened up our family to somebody who needed it more, and making this a safe space for them to be able to work through in whatever screaming, shouting, tantrum, crazy behaviour that they need to do to start discovering who they are. It will be uncomfortable. That is fasting, guys. Not just not eating chocolate. You know, across the country we work and get inspired by lots of churches where churches are really wrapped around the people who are stepping up to foster, those who are stepping up to adopt. And here are some of the stories of what's happened. There's a church in Leeds where some people have taken on some children. The children wet the beds nightly. And some old ladies in church said, leave the sheets outside your front door every day. We will come and collect them. We will launder them for you and we will bring them back. I do not know the impact that has on that family, but I can imagine that's pretty huge. Something so deeply practical, so unassuming, but yet means that that church possibly becomes closer to being like a fostering church, or a church where people who've adopted get to do it really well, feel really supported. There's churches in Worcester, as I mentioned, the Promised Land. If you want to go and visit it, it's up the M25, you'll get there. But anyway, in the Promised Land, there is a church or a couple of churches that bought some industrial irons and made a cafe in their sanctuary so that people could come in and have a tea or coffee whilst some other people would take the laundry away and iron it for them whilst they waited. If, like me, you don't like ironing, I put a jumper on to try and cover up, I don't like ironing. How brilliant is that? Again, practical and unassuming. Sometimes we're going to need to think outside the box. Who of you are going to be supporting David and Katie? Who are you going to be in DBS check to make sure that they can have time where they get to go out and have date nights, where they can just have normal life? They need a date night, guys. You should have just seen David's face. He was like... That's family, isn't it? Caring for one another, meeting the needs of one another, even if that puts us out. So, we're coming into land. I want to tell you a couple of stories before I end. I know I'm going a little bit over time. I'll beg forgiveness later, and you have to forgive me, because that's really awkward, isn't it? It says it in the Bible. Two stories. One, I get to work with an amazing lady called Billie Jo. And Billie Jo was one of these young people who suffered neglect and abuse at the hands of her birth mother. She had siblings who, when it came to them having to go into care, they would all go into different places, and they didn't necessarily see each other. And maybe they'd then come back together again in the home, and then they'd split up again. All sorts of stuff like that. Her life followed the pattern we talked about, those statistics. At 16, 17, or actually at 12, 13, she was drug running on her estate somewhere in Kent, because that's what she did. That was where she was getting that sense of significance from people valuing her. When she was 16, she was involved in a crime that ultimately, by the time she was 20, she went to prison for it. And she spent a few years in prison and came out thinking, gosh, what on earth is happening in life? She spent times where she was faced, do you want to stay living in this household where it's abusive? Because if you say you don't want to, we're going to have to remove your brother and sister too. Or do you want to go and live in a house on your own? And what she desperately wanted was a home and a family that was different. So when she left prison, age 20, she met her now husband. They weren't husband then. They had their child. Ultimately, they got married. And her child at school came back one day and said, we're learning about Jesus. And Billie was like, oh, schools, Jesus. Don't like that. I'm going to go and disprove them. She shouldn't be putting this nonsense in my child's head. She's like, how do I find out about Jesus? And she found out about Jesus by going on an Alpha course, which is possibly the wrong place to go and find out about Jesus if you want to have a negative opinion of him at the end of it. But anyway, she went on this Alpha course and she was saved. Billie Jo now is a lay minister in the Diocese of Rochester. As a care leaver, she is passionate about speaking to people, using her story to say, you know what? Children need this. Children need homes. And to some degree, she's an embodiment of where that hope can potentially lead. But last year, what was so amazing, we used to joke occasionally what was going to happen in her normal day-to-day work. She went to speak in one church. And at the end of the service, somebody came up to her and said, have you got a sister called? I do. Did you live here? Yes. I cared for you when you were 3 years old. I was your first ever foster carer. And this little lady, who was part of an evangelical church somewhere in deepest, darkest Kent, who'd stepped forward to foster, she said, we only had you for a very short period of time, but I prayed for you every day. And I always felt so guilty, actually, that we couldn't keep you in the long term. I felt so guilty. And for this moment of utter healing for her, being able to understand that actually God knew her life from the beginning, despite all the trials she faced, despite prison, despite all the challenges of feeling that she did not fit in the church and had to build church into being her family to understand all the things she didn't have put into her, brought about this incredible healing. And now this wonderful lady called Tandy is kind of like become a grandparent to her, because she knew her for when she was little. How important is that? And the final story before we end is, one of my other colleagues was speaking in the north of England last year. And he'd spoken at this church before with Home for Good's founder, a guy called Krish. And a lady came up to John and said, John, do you remember me? And John said that he did, which was what you should say when someone says, do you remember me? Even if you don't. Just preparing you for later. Said, do you remember me? Because last time you spoke, it was really powerful for me. Really powerful. I wanted to tell you that after you came to speak, I went on and I've adopted a little girl. And John was like, oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I'm so encouraged by you telling me that story. And said, yeah, but wait. You see, I just want to tell you another little thing. So I hadn't thought about adoption before. But I went to go and get a tattoo. And on my arm, she showed this tattoo, which, if you don't agree with tattoos, that's not part of the story. But she showed this tattoo and it said, faith, hope, on her arm. She said, I went to go and get this tattoo. It says faith, hope on it. And you know what? I found out that when I got to adopt my little girl, the day she was born was the day I went to go and get this tattoo that said faith, hope. So as I was sitting in a tattooist chair having something faith, hope written on my arm, a little child was being born who was going to need my faith and hope to meet her needs, even though she got deep challenges that was going on. John was like, wow, that's incredible. So we know what's even more incredible. That child's birth mother called her daughter Faith Hope. She didn't know anything about my tattoo. She didn't know me. She was probably not hoping that child would end up going through the pain of ultimately being adopted and having to deal with that trauma that will sit there, that will have an impact on her brain. But God knew. That gave me goosebumps when he told me that story. I don't know how he kept standing up there. God knows each one of the children who are in care, that are going to be cared for in this church. He knows them. He loves them more than you ever will. We just get to be bit part players in part of that story for as long as they need. So as we come to close, I've got a couple of questions for you. One, would you foster or adopt? There aren't age limits. There aren't lots of things you need to do. There is a process. But if you are interested, if you feel that there's something that God might have called you, maybe this is something that as an 8-year-old kid, God placed in your heart and you've never done something with it, even if it's many, many years past, could this be you? I'd love to talk to you at the end. I'd love other churches in Sutton to become known as fostering churches. The other question I want to ask you is, how are you going to support? How are you going to support David and Katie when they're going to do this? Who else do you know within your community who is already doing some of these things, already stepping out? How are you going to support them? Please make a commitment to do that. And thirdly, would you stand with Home for Good? Would you partner with us? I've got some books at the back too. If you would like to become a regular giver to Home for Good, even if it's just £5 a month, I'll give you a book based by our founder, Krish, that will could come with a health warning. If you read that, you might feel that you need to come and step up to become one of the people in the first bit and actually foster, adopt, or support yourself. But would you stand with us? Because we have a dream that Sutton will be a place where churches have stepped in to meet the needs of the children who need homes in this borough. We believe that. We want to see that happen. Would you do one of those things? But thank you very much for listening to me. I'm sorry I've gone slightly over time, but I trust that God will use what was useful in that for you. Amen.